Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Wednesday night. It is October the 26th, 2016. We are almost to the end of this month. Welcome in, Feather Light, and welcome in everyone that is listening.
Namaste.
Oh, namaste, namaste, namaste. How are you?
Splendid. How are you, Black Rose?
I'm well. I'm super, super well. I'll be coming back home to Houston for the weekend. I'm so, so looking forward to it. I'm so anxious. I'm already packed. In fact, I did not even. It's so pitiful. Let me tell you, on this little 2-week stint, you're not going to believe this. I didn't even pull my clothes out of my bag. For 2 weeks, I literally have been living out of my suitcase. I'm like, no, I want to be ready. I want to be ready.
I want to be ready.
I want to be ready. The only thing I put in the closet were my shoes. I put my boots in there and my raincoat. Because I knew I wouldn't need that daily. But everything else, it is still right here where it's been ever since I walked in this room and checked in. Seriously.
Really?
That is so pitiful.
Wow.
That is
you're letting Cleveland know you are not getting your hands on me. I'm just passing through.
Yes, yes. It has been 6 weeks, and I have exactly like 10 more days to be in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So once I come back to Houston this weekend, then I'll be here on the 31st until I fly out the 9th. And honey, I don't care. Like, my flight normally leaves like at 1 something. Man, I'm flying up out of here like 9:00 in the morning. As soon as I get up, I'm like heading to the airport. I don't care. I will sit in the airport and read, wait, sleep.
I don't care, whatever.
Yes. Just, you know, let me hear. No offense to Cleveland. It's just, you know, it's been just a long time, and it's cold here, and it's kind of dreary, and I'm used to palm trees and sunshine, okay?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm used to sunshine and palm trees. Thank you. A little bit too dreary.
I love the little video you sent of Tasty coming down the hallway. You said, this is me getting off the plane.
This is... Wait, I'm telling you, when I get off the plane, I'm like,
did that little spin.
Wait, I'm gonna get this song up that I want to play. It's gonna take a second though, but I'll play it for everybody to let everybody know what song is in my mind when I look out that window and I see Houston. I'm like, yay! But while I'm doing that, in the news, let me get this up right here. In the news, Eric Garner, if everyone remembers, just give me a second. I'm trying to do this right here. Let's see. Give me a second. While I'm doing this, could you tell us about what the early voting lines have been looking like there in Texas?
Oh, because, my goodness. Okay,
yeah,
so.
Yeah.
I live right across the street from this park that where you can go and vote, okay, in this building. And so I can see every day, you know, as I'm going back and forth to the park, to the store, and what have you, the lines. The lines are so long. Well, compared to what I thought they would be since this early voting, it just started Monday. And, I mean, these people are coming out to vote. They are serious. And I live here in Houston. It's very international. It's like a mini New York, so you see so many different nationalities here. And I must admit, I've never seen this many Caucasians in one place since I've been here these past 6.5, almost 7 years, as I have seen standing in line for early voting to cast their vote for the next president of the United States. I mean, these folks are serious. They've got cars parked all up and down the street. I mean, they're just, as soon as one car pulls out, another car pulls in its place. So I'm trying to time it as to when I can go over there, because I'm definitely doing, I always do early voting. So I think it's between 9:30 and 10 in the morning. You know, the early folks go on, they've gone, you know, come in and gone and head out to work. And then, you know, the lunch time is not here yet, and then the evening folks haven't come yet. So I think between 9:30 and 10 is when I will track my behind over there and cast my vote. Speaking of voting, also, I wanted to make this little point while you're doing that.
Okay.
HR, the HR departments, are stating that they have had so many problems with their employees getting into it over Hillary and Trump. I mean,
wait a minute. What are you saying? You're saying
they are almost to throwing blows. You know, like when they're in the lunchroom, when they're at their desk. You know, if somebody says they're for Hillary,
like different websites or
yes.
Okay,
the human resources. It has come to human resources, is what I'm saying. I mean, this one particular guy, he's a senior person. He's like the top salesperson. You know how they get when they're the top salesperson, been there forever, probably can't do anything else. He went to human resources and said that she goes or I go, because she is for, yes, I'm serious. She is for Hillary. And, you know, it just kind of came out that she was for Hillary. She wasn't like, hey, nah, nah, nah. She just kind of, and he just
got, she has her right.
Yeah, exactly. She has that right. And he got the pounding on the lunchroom table and using all kinds of verbal language. And so he started heckling her on Facebook, taunting her on Facebook. So she went to human resources about it. So he went to human resources and said, either she goes or I go, because I can't work with her. And so this isn't the only company that's experienced this problem. They have found out that a lot of companies are experiencing problems with employees over their differences over these two candidates.
Wow.
It has gotten really,
serious. And bitter presidential race breeds workplace tension.
Yeah, I was just speaking to one of my colleagues here, and I said, I wish I could be a fly on the wall at the Thanksgiving table this year, at a few Thanksgiving dinners this year, just to hear people, the families going at it, clawing at each other. And, you know, there's always a report that Thanksgiving is the holiday where you have the most increase of domestic violence.
Yes,
because you know you got
that.
Your drunk ass uncle to come over and he acts
yep.
cool,
yeah,
you know,
yep.
and everybody start thinking about what he did when you was a teenager,
yeah.
and
yeah, is Uncle Charlie coming, this, girl? You know he coming, oh Lord,
and all this crazy mess. But if you don't know about Texas, even though Texas is like a red state, red, Texas always has a low voter turnout. It's just low vote, especially with Democrats. It's just a low voter turnout, always has been as long as I've been there, because I've been working in politics there, and it's always just a low voter turnout. So I'm just really shocked. I remember now the last time when I went to vote, I walked in, I was able to walk straight in, but then as I came out, I know there was a long line. So I've always just been pretty fortunate, but I always early vote. Anyway, I rarely go on election day because I just don't want to deal with the crowds. It's easier for me to early vote. I can just stop anywhere. I don't have to worry about going to the certain poll precinct and all of that stuff. So I just always like to early vote anyway. So
me
but,
too.
Yeah,
when you're out and about and you just see one of those signs that says early voting here, you can just pull up and vote, not necessarily have to go where you're assigned. Like I still don't have my new voter's registration card, you know, since we moved, and so with this early voting I can just walk across the street, show my ID.
Did you know that since you are 65 you can actually request a ballot to come to your house?
I read that
online. Yep, in Texas.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hello.
If you're 65, you can request a ballot. Welcome in, King B, and I believe this is Brother Brown,
Thank
right?
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
King B and Brother Brown.
Hey, Brown.
Hey,
what's up?
You guys have a brother in the house.
Have you guys heard that some of the voting machines in parts thereof, like in North Carolina, they are flipping? Yeah, you say you vote for Hillary Clinton?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So how is that resolved?
Well, if you do, there is
I can give you information
you
on
call.
That. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I can give you accurate information from the ground here in North Carolina. What is going on? And I had to post in BTR community the mistake I made, because I had recently said we got rid of those because of problems with the electronic touch screen, you know, like your ATM, same company, Diebold, the same criminals, same old ones that did 2000 and what have you. But they said in these precincts, the counties or districts that's using those, because we don't have them in our district, but that it will change it. But that it gives you an opportunity. You have to be paying attention. So, again, we are still talking about vote flipping, but some people have been able to catch it and then correct it before they submit the ballot. And so you can catch it. It doesn't just automatically, like it did me in 2000 when I voted for Nader and it flipped the Bush. It right in front of my eyes, a flash, my ballot has been cast, no chance to correct it whatsoever. So yeah, and it's
are you serious?
Yes, I kid you not. And so yes, but let's not forget there was reports of the same thing going on during the Democratic primary. So I just wanted to break in and give y'all that report from North Carolina. Since
how you
TV.
Doing, brother?
Hey,
good
brothers.
Voice, brother.
Hey, Brother Brown and everyone.
And it's Canty. Yeah,
how y'all doing?
Canty.
Yeah. The situation I'll never get over how what happened in Florida, November 2000. where for the first time the mainstream media was told to hold up on their exit voting prediction, and that it was not going to be determined that Al Gore was the winner. I said, uh-oh, here comes some serious trouble. And lo and behold, didn't know until later on, Al Gore, being that he was a closet Afrophobic, didn't want to use blacks as a centerpiece for getting his seat into the White House. So he had his lawyer go around every nook and cranny, except the real deal was that blacks was disenfranchised in Florida. So Bush had the votes, the ballots counted, recounted by a fix, jive Republicans and stooges for this governor named Jeb Bush. Then you had 4 years later a black man named Ken Blackwell in Ohio. He was a staunch Republican, a stooge for the oligarchs in the Republican Party. He wanted to keep his promise to Bush that he would be a second term president. He disenfranchised his own black people in Ohio. Out of all those black pastors in Ohio, not one would prove and give an example of what they meant when they said, "For God I'll live and for God I'll die." Not one leading pastor that was black said a mumbling word. So Bush was able to steal not one but two elections at our expense. And I said to myself, blacks will never get over this. They're going to pay for this one way or the other come the next presidential. Now, what was so amazing, Obama became president without a hitch the first go-round, without a hitch. And the second go-round was still without a hitch. But
well,
the city
you
that...
know what? Here's the deal. Here's the deal. They always... This always happens with the machines. I think I can recall at least like the past three presidential elections, and it's been some type of malfunctioning going on with the machines. And if you recall, and we talked about this earlier, King B, what was that, 2012, when Mitt Romney was running, the HIG company, which donated to Mitt Romney's campaign,
yes,
on the damn machines. So the way I look at it is, black people vote, we vote, people go and vote, not just black people, we go and vote, but you have these elites that actually own the machines. They can hack,
yep,
the machines. The machines can do whatever they want them to do, and that's just what it is. So,
and the modem is tamper-friendly.
Yeah, I mean, anybody can hack the machine, just like they hacked the darn slot machines at the casinos. So, I mean, it happens. But, you know, go and vote if that's what you want to do. I'm going to vote. Well, I actually been requesting my absentee ballot, and I have not received it yet. So I'm a little concerned about that. But if I don't get a chance to vote, I know all of you guys are going to go and vote, and so your vote is going to count, because guess what? I'm not voting for Hillary or Trump anyway, because I don't live in a swing state. I can vote Green Party. I can write in. Brother Brown, you said you write in. Who you writing in this year?
Well, I've been writing in since 1972, and I've been writing for the same people, Dr. King and Malcolm X. I have never voted in the Brothers.
You said you what?
I have never voted for any candidate in a presidential election.
Oh, okay.
Candidates in 72 up until now. Because my theory is that none of them have ever done anything for black people. So if you're not...
You're right about that.
So what we don't understand is that we control the political arena at the local level rather than we do at the national level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with the city council, something like that, that I control the destiny of my community,
school
that's
board
would be put on. But as far
judges,
as that they got up there, and you know, a lot of black people, I used to run an organization called Voters Beware.
Mm.
And what I would do was educate the people, the public, to the voting process. But one of the elements that I used to use was the presidential election of 1876 with Robert Tilton and the group of Behave. That was the first real initiative of showing black people, because we had just got the right to vote, of showing us that they pick who they want to, regardless of who's running. And if that happened in 1876, then why the hell haven't we caught on by now?
And we never bothered to show our maturity as to how the game of politics is played, where we have never made concession demands written in black and white like a contractual agreement. We are the only people that vote and then wait and see. We don't hold these politicians accountable with concession demands, and we wonder why, like here in New York, we had a governor named Mario Cuomo, who blacks voted heavily for Mario Cuomo because they didn't want the former mayor, Ed Koch, to become governor, because Koch was a three-term mayor and he was a real insect, a diabolical insect. So blacks came out in heavy numbers to vote for this man named Mario Cuomo. And then when Mario Cuomo became governor, he was bypassing black people's interests. So when there was a meeting held with Mario Cuomo, with the black misleaders, I call them, they asked him, well, what about us? We were hoping you would concern yourself with our concerns. And he said, I don't owe your people anything, simply because you only voted for me because you had nowhere else to go. So get out of my face. You only voted for me because you didn't want Ed Koch to be governor. So now here comes this Mario Cuomo that showed his ass, excuse the expression, so severe his hatred for blacks and contempt for blacks, money that was earmarked to build housing downstate, he diverted that money to build housing upstate, jails. In the history of New York State, this man named Mario Cuomo built the most jails in the history of New York State.
Okay, hey, we kind of going all off to another direction, and I want to give out the number for people to call in, and I want to give out the topic for tonight so that we can get ready to dig into that. Tonight we are talking about the Black Panther Party 50th anniversary. Yes, and we're going to talk about racist terrorism, how that persists. I'm sure everyone has heard the story of the black teenager who was attacked by a noose, attacked by his classmates. They lassoed a noose around his neck, and he immediately told his parents. This happened like about 2 weeks ago.
And what happened to the kids?
What happened to the kids?
To the white kids.
So far nothing has happened because one of the students' parents is a police officer, and the other student's parent is a teacher. And from my understanding, the sheriff, what I've heard, he's a black sheriff, and he pretty much tried to convince the parents to not press charges. I hope that I'm incorrect on that sheriff being black.
No, don't
it doesn't
be.
Matter because,
no, don't be.
I mean, some of them can be just as bad. Just because you skin folk don't mean you kin folk. But the sheriff has been said to have tried to convince the parents to not press charges because things could get a little rough for them around there in Mississippi. So he doesn't want them to press charges, but the parents have involved the NAACP. So we're going to talk more about that topic too, but I want to give out the phone number for people to call. You can call in if you want to share your thoughts, because we want to hear your thoughts on the Black Panther Party and their 50-year anniversary. As we know, Black Panthers, they rose up to fight against police brutality, also to help the community. Brother Brown is going to talk about his experience with the Black Panther Party. But we want to hear what you have to say. This is something that they were fighting for 50 years ago, going up against police brutality, trying to feed the community. And here we are 50 years later, we have teenagers still having nooses put around their necks and things like this. So this is crazy. So we want to hear what would you do, what are your thoughts, and what would you do if this happened to your child, and what do you think the school board, what actions should the school board take? Since
these schools now, and particularly Mississippi, have a zero tolerance policy. If you have children that are being arrested for having a temper tantrum, picking up a free milk and they're on free lunch, and then they're arrested and being accused of stealing milk, but they're on free lunch, then it seemed like to me these boys would be arrested knowing that there's this culture of teenagers that deliberately run down black people in the street and kill them. I can't think of the name of that man, but those teenagers, they went to jail for that. They were convicted for that. So this happens. So people call in, share your thoughts, 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. And the access code is 549032, and press pound.
Can I say something?
Yes.
Brown, and anybody who else might will remember, do you remember when they formulated, prior to calling it the Black Panthers, it was called the Deacons for Defense?
Yeah, that was in North Carolina.
Right, and their intention was to protect black people from Klan atrocities or the aggression against blacks by the Klan, but their emblem was, or the trademark was, the Black Panther. Am I right?
I would say I'm trying to remember that, but I know who the Deacons of Defense were. The emblem of the Black Panther was used by SNCC. Down in Mississippi, that's where that first came into play.
Okay,
with Stokely Carmichael.
Right, right. Now,
that was
very organized. That was
organized in Lewdown County, Mississippi, down there with Fannie Lou Hamer, and
right,
they came
okay.
up under the Black Panther. For defense were a bunch of longshoremen that came from Wilmington, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And what their initiative was, they got tired of Klan activity in their community.
Thank you.
I mean, they said if the Klan can pull a gun on us, we can pull a gun on them.
There you go.
And after they did that, they had a confrontation with the Klan. And I think one of the guys that started that movement, I think his last name was Williams. I think his name was Robert Williams. I'm trying to remember his name.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And,
no, Robert Williams, I'm sorry. He's like Monroe, North Carolina, 30 miles from where I am, on the other side of Charlotte, North Carolina. He started a Black Guard here in North Carolina. Remember, he's the author of Negroes with Guns. So wasn't the Deacons for Defense. That he started the Black Guard. Remember, he was in the NAACP, and they suspended him,
sure,
and
enough.
His wife took over. And then, but he always had the Black Guard, you know, and trained. They were training. Okay, just wanted to add that. Thank you.
And you know they end up running him out of the country.
Mm.
But they end up running him out of the country, and you know, but the point about the Panthers was that when Huey Newton and Bobby Seale got together, they were tired of the police brutality. These were guys that had been, I think.
Wait a minute, hold on, Brother Brown. Before you get into your lecture and discussion, we need to take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and then we can get into our topic. I want to just open up with a couple of quick little news topics, and then we can jump right on into our topic, because I'm so anxious to hear what you have to say. And we also want to read, Aja is going to share a piece, just an introductory piece for us on the Panthers, and then we can just go straight on into our discussion. So let's just take our quick little break so we can get ready to hear from our speaker tonight. We will be right back. You're tuning in to the Lotus Place Radio Show, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project,
a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
When I'm on the plane, I'm like, yes, I put on for my city. Oh, Lord Jesus, I'm so happy to see Houston when I get in. Oh, it's just like, oh, thank you. Okay. But look, also, did anybody hear the news about Daniel Kingby? You may have heard this. Daniel Patelio, one of the cops that was... come on now with that rattling, whoever that is. Come on now, come on. I don't have my medication, so kind of working my nerves with that. I don't have my medication. Whoever is rattling, please discontinue the rattling. So.
Police officer Pantaleo.
So he may be charged for the murder. Yes. In the death of Eric Gardner. Eric Gardner died on July 17, 2014, after being placed in a chokehold by Officer Daniel Patiello during an arrest for selling so-called untaxed cigarettes in New York City. And, of course, the incident was caught on video by, what's his name, Canton? Can't call his name right now. What's the young man's name, the videographer? Videographer. Oh God, I don't know what happened, Canty. But anyway, I can't call the young man's name. He's been arrested several times.
I think Canty dropped off the line. That might have been his line Canty. That noise was coming from. But I think he dropped off the line. I don't know.
Oh.
I don't see anyone in the caller's queue.
Okay.
His name is Ramsey Orter.
Yeah, thank you, Ramsey Orter. So Ramsey.
And he's
Orter.
Doing 4 years in jail. On a BS compromise conviction. He's the only one that's connected with the murder of Eric Gardner that's in jail. Pantaleo, the killer cop, never was even fearful of being indicted. He made over $140,000 in overtime. The former police commissioner didn't even have no desire to fire him. And it's one of the most horrendous injustice done in this town, and the black leadership in the pulpit and in politics said nothing in holding no demonstrations in front of the DA's office, who's a Democrat now. The new DA is a Democrat. And I followed Ramsey Orter from the day one when he and his wife, Chrissy Ortiz, were harassed by the police because the video went viral, seen around the world by millions, and there was a vendetta against Ramsey Orter. Thanks to Reverend Sharpton, at the funeral where I was at Garner's funeral, Sharpton had the audacity in their litigated gall to invite Ramsey Orter to come stand with him on the pulpit, offering him up to the police. Unbeknown to Orter, his wife Chrissy, and those that were in the audience didn't know that Sharpton was a facilitator to offer this young man up to the police to have their vendetta against him. Because that following night after the funeral, he was harassed with bright spotlight shining into his house at 3 o'clock in the morning, following him and his wife to work, all kinds of BS arrests, rendering him to be targeted with no one to come to his side to get a court injunction to stop the vendetta. So right. he had two lawyers that were social
Canty.
Parasites. Yeah.
Canty.
Yeah.
So can we talk about how Daniel is now going to be charged?
Yeah. There's a dispute between the Office of Justice in D.C. headed by Loretta Lynch and I dare say this Uncle Tom prosecutor, federal prosecutor here in New York, a black brother who didn't want to indict the white cop.
Mm.
And there was no black leader to denounce this federal representative here in New York to let this killer cop go. So this is where we're at now, where Loretta Lynch, I fear she's going to pull the same thing that this prosecutor in Baltimore pulled, where she talked a good game, but she didn't have her act together. And because there is a dispute between the Justice Department in Washington, D.C., and the federal prosecutor here in New York, which was released from the case.
So federal investigators in Brooklyn have been replaced by D.C. counterparts because of their reluctance to bring charges, according to a source.
Exactly.
I personally don't know what these people plan to do, and I've been hearing that the whole plan was to just wait until Obama's out of office for this case to even be brought to any kind of to the Justice Department to be reviewed. So,
and the sad thing about it, the family abruptly or prematurely took the hush money.
Well,
the wife is riding around in a brand new car. You know, all kinds of nonsense going on. Our people confuse hush money with justice.
Mm.
The city was obligated to give them the money for compensating for the loss of their loved one, but let's get justice first.
Mm-hmm. Well, Canty, some of these people, they need the money, and if you notice, the people that are being killed are a lot of these people that are living in impoverished communities. So when somebody throw them $6 million in their face and they've been struggling trying to get the light bill paid, they want their $6 million.
Yeah, but when they
I can't say that, you know, they're wrong for taking it, because maybe they can take that $6 million and go help some political prisoners get free or something. Some of these people get $50 for bail money.
Yeah. The same family, Garner family.
Or hire a really good lawyer.
Yeah, well, the same Garner family turned their backs on Ramsey Orter. I was at Orter's trial, and believe me, each time I was there, not one time, other than the younger daughter, who has been quite outspoken, she wasn't at the trial when he was officially sent away to jail for 4 years. And that he prayed for him, because Ramsey Orter looked really, really bad. Physically.
Well, when he was in jail, they were trying to poison him with the rat poison.
That's right. And
you were supposed to be looking up the information so we can put some money on his books, so we can help him get some food, because that's what he was doing the last time he was in jail, eating from the vending machine.
Yeah, so. I gotta call his trusted friend that, and I'll get the information tomorrow. I promise you I will.
Get that information for us so we can put some money on his books. We need to move on, though. We need to move on. Did anybody hear about what's the man named Jared, who was the Subway spokesperson? You know, he was arrested for being a pedophile and all of that. So now his wife is saying that she wants to sue Subway because Subway knew that he was a pedophile because there were three other incidents. Whereas people actually came forward and said that Jared had been molesting them. But Subway continued to allow him to be the spokesperson because he was viewed as a cash cow. Now, I'm bringing up this story because I want to connect this to Birth of a Nation, because I finally did get a chance to go see it. It's a great movie. I was going to go
see
it.
Good for you.
Yes. I took some time. I just had to go and see it. So I'm bringing up this because people were so adamant about boycotting Birth of a Nation, which supposedly, like, at the opening weekend, only made like about $7 or $8 million versus Madea Tyler Perry's Halloween movie. Yes, $28 million.
which goes to show where, you know, our minds are, but people want to complain about what's being done to black people, but okay. So I just want to know, everybody that was so upset about Birth of a Nation and wanted to boycott, I just want to know, you're going to boycott Subway now? Since Jared was raping children. I just really want to know. Because
you
didn't boycott Subway when they was using yoga mat material in the damn bread. You had no problems with that.
Right.
Okay. So I want to know, now will you boycott Subway since they were allowing a pedophile to continue to be the spokesperson, although they... I just want to know.
Are you really loyal to the cause?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did they say officially why they were boycotting the film Birth of a Nation?
Yeah, because Nate Parker went to trial and was acquitted. He and his roommate at the time, who was also co-writer and producer of this film, Birth of a Nation, they were acquitted. Well, Nate Parker was acquitted of rape because the girl was his, the person that accused both of them of rape was Nate Parker's girlfriend at the time. But the other two men apparently came in the room, so after the fact, she claims that she was raped by all of them because she was intoxicated and inebriated. And that's a whole nother story that I would really like to explore. You know, that's just a touchy subject right there when people are getting so inebriated that you're being raped. I don't get that. Lord knows, back in my day, Lord knows, I'm not even going to lie, I used to get lit. But never in my life did I get so lit that somebody was able to take advantage of me. So I'm not saying that it's right, or not saying that I condone that, or we should excuse the behavior of people when they take advantage of someone that's intoxicated. What I want to deal with is, what is going on in your life that you get that intoxicated, that you get that smashed, Where you don't know when somebody is having sex with you? I've never gotten. I'm telling you, I'm not gonna lie. We all grown. What? I'm talking gin, vodka, smoking, all of that, except for crack and stuff like that. But you know, I never got so lit where I was out of it. Never.
Yeah, but see, when you're dealing with a nice white lady, all she got to do is scream rape, and they don't care if they get the right black man. Back in the days, he would be lynched. So now, I'm sure this had to have been a white woman, because then who gives a damn if it was a black woman that's raped?
Right.
And the very idea that black women would believe those white women about Trump abusing them and sexually molesting them, but they didn't want to believe Tawana Brawley, because the white man said that she lied. And the sad thing about white women, they don't have to worry about consequences for lying on a black man. They're not going to be charged with any kind of thing like falsifying a police report. But this young man, Nate Parker, at the time, he was acquitted of the trial by a jury. But mind you now, that poison was put out there about a 17-year-old case. At the same time, the film was about to be released to the theaters.
And he's already been an actor in 20 different films. So
you
mean to tell me 20 films ago you weren't upset? Oh, my God. But listen, before we get into our Black Panther topic, Delta, come on, bring us our Mississippi update.
Hi, Delta.
How you doing,
Doctor? All right. Well, you know, my great state made the news again, and we made it for all the wrong reasons. There was a incident, and we found out recently on the news that the incident happened 2 weeks ago, and the school kept it a hush-hush. There was a young black boy that was on a football team up in Wiggins, Mississippi, and he was 17 years old, and these four white boys, but they said two of them was the ring leader, and got him in front of the football team, got behind the young man, put a noose around his neck, and pulled it. And really, it was like the lynch, like how they put around the neck in the slavery days, and they said, tuck it and pull the noose. And they said he tucked it and he pulled it. And then I heard the mother said the other day on the news here that her son and the NAACP said the young man had like rope burns around the neck. So that lets you know they pulled that noose hard.
That's right.
And a lot of the white folks are trying to say, oh, they was horse playing. Now wait one moment. You know they was not horse playing when you take a rope and put around a child's neck. You're not horse playing with nobody like that. And so that's what the white folks say wanna say. And I must say, I hate to use this word. These nigger preachers, Lord forgive me for saying that.
Why?
They won't be little preachers to come together Thursday night and have a prayer session. Then let's try to get along. And basically, to me, it's saying we're gonna get along. We're gonna sweep it under the rug. Okay, why you didn't do nothing in the beginning? Because the mother went and tried to press charges when her son came home from school. If the son thought it was a prank, he wouldn't have said that to his mother. But the son was so upset when he came home, she told his mother. He's 17 years old. So it must have frightened him pretty bad. So when he told the mother goes down to the police station and tried to press charges. The sheriff at the station would not let the mother press charges. You supposed to be able to press charges on anybody. He told the mother, why do you really want to press charges? That's gonna bring up a lot of backlash. Do you really want to do that? And the mother said he wouldn't let her press him, and he just kept her talking and would not let her press charges. But come to find out, one of the boys, because it was two boys they really getting, but I heard it was four boys altogether. One of mother is an educator at the school, and one of the boys' parents is a retired police officer. So here it is that you're going to put a rope around the neck. No, well, let me back up. The school has a policy, and it states in the handbook, no tolerance.
Zero tolerance.
Zero tolerance.
Most schools have zero tolerance. Yes.
When you put your hand on another student, it's no tolerance. You automatically fail. You automatically go to an alternative school.
Yeah, they expel
the
student.
You put a noose around a child's neck to kill a child. And there was nothing done. Nothing got done until the media got hold to it. And they still not telling anybody what they done. But the NAACP is trying to bring it to light because they want the young man tried as a hate crime. And then on top of that, these same young men in Wiggins, Mississippi, let's get it out there, I want to keep expanding, in Wiggins, Mississippi, this young man who put the rope around the neck, him and about 15 more boys drove, they love to drive their pickup trucks. They drove pickup trucks, and they had these huge, huge rebel flags. And the people said they parade every morning going to school, on school property every morning. The school didn't ask them to take them off. The superintendent didn't ask them to take off. Nobody asked them to take it off. The parents got together and started petitions and causing a scene. And that's the only way they can get the rebel truck flags taken off the truck. Why
isn't
the principal didn't do anything? And then
isn't
let me tell
something?
Y'all this. They have a nigger coach. Lord, forgive me again for saying that word.
Oh, Lord.
They have
Why?
A nigger coach. Listen, a Uncle Tom nigger coach. he did not even step up and but he was so afraid because he's the first black coach there. He didn't want to lose his job. They just brought him there this year. He did not do anything about the situation. Not anything. So we got some Uncle Tom.
It's not Uncle
right
Tom.
There.
We got some Sambo. Not Uncle Tom.
Yeah.
Uncle Tom was a good one.
Sambo, Jambo, whatever you want to call him.
I short call them blacknecks.
Yeah, blacknecks. A bunch of blacknecks. And that's why I say, I mean, I can't sit here and say it's just, you know, I'm just referencing what you started out with when you said it's the white people. No, it's the black folks, too, because if the pastor's not standing up along with their family to help them press charges and to bring more attention to this, then they just as bad. They just
and
as bad. Forget them.
It's like a universal problem.
Y'all need to stop going to church over there.
Thank you. Listen, yeah, you got a universal problem with these pastors, because if here, a block, right on the block where I live, there's this pastor that like 1,000 people for both services. He told a focused young man he doesn't get involved with politics. And this is the problem. These pastors do not want to get involved with anything that's controversial, dealing with justice and liberation causes.
No.
And when Dr. King died, the movement died.
Well, let's pick back up on this story, but Featherlight has to leave us soon, so she has a piece that she wants to share with us. So, Featherlight? Yes, I am here. I took myself off mute. Okay, so this is the information on the black, the founding of the Black Panther Party. On Saturday, October 15th, 1966, on this date in 1966, the Black Panther Party was founded. It was a black political organization originally known as the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. The Black Panther Party originated in Oakland, California by founders Huey Newton and Bobby Seale. The original six members of the Black Panthers included Elbert Big Man Howard. I got a
black
chance to meet him. I met him.
Oh,
I did too. Yes, got a chance to have his book. Yep. Spent time with him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So did I. Sherman Forte, Reggie Forte, Little Bobby Hutton, and Newton and Seal. They adopted the Black Panther symbol from an independent political party established the previous year by black residents of Lowndes County, Alabama. The Panthers also supported the Black Power Movement, which stressed racial dignity and self-reliance. The party established patrols in black communities to monitor police activities and protect the residents from police brutality. Now, this is back in 1966. We're still struggling with that. The Black Panther Party combined elements of socialism and black nationalism. It promoted the development of strong black control institutions, calling for blacks to work together to protect their rights and to improve the economic and social conditions. The Panthers also emphasized class unity, criticizing the black middle class for acting against the interests of other less fortunate blacks. Still dealing with that.
Hello.
They welcome alliances with white activists, such as the Students for a Democratic Society, and later the Weathermen, because they believe that all revolutionaries who wanted to change U.S. society should unite across racial lines. The Black Party, Black Panther Party grew throughout the late 1960s and eventually had chapters all over the country. As racial tension increased around the country, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, blamed the Black Panthers for riots and other incidents of violence. The Bureau launched a program called COINTELPRO, short for Counterintelligence Program, designed to disrupt efforts to unify black militant groups such as SNCC and the Panthers. In December 1969, two Chicago leaders of the party, Fred Hampton
and Mark Clark were killed in a police raid. By the end of the decade, according to the party's attorney, 28 Panthers had been killed, and many other members either were in jail or had been forced to leave the United States to avoid arrest. After Newton's conviction was reversed, he called for developing survival programs in black communities to build support for the Black Panther Party. These programs provided free breakfast for children, established free medical clinics, kept the homeless, find housing, gave away free clothing and foods. A lot of people don't know about this. They don't know about all the great things that this group did. They're just listening to hearsay, the media.
That's right.
This attempt to shift the direction of the party did not prevent further external attacks and internal conflicts, and the party continued to decline as a political force. After the departure of Newton and Seal, the party's new leader, Elaine Brown, continued to emphasize community service programs. These programs were frequently organized and run by black women, who were a majority in the party by the mid-1970s. By the end of the 1970s, weakened by external attacks, legal problems, and internal divisions, we always have that internal division thing going.
We just can't
unite. We can move swifter.
That's what
the Panthers
with
no
Garvey.
Longer a political force.
That's what happened with Marcus Garvey. Internal conflict.
Exactly, internal conflict. Throughout their decline, several women sustained the organization's community programs until 1981, when the Oakland-based program closed. In 1997, the Black Panther Party Research Project was created to locate sources and develop finding aids to assist researchers and the general public with uncovering information about the Black Panther Party, one of the 20th century's most controversial yet least researched organizations. And there you have it.
Thank you so very much
for sharing that information. And like you said, a lot of people don't realize all of the marvelous things that the Panthers instituted, all the great social community acts that they instituted, like the free breakfast, breakfast for children, which was then adopted by the school system. So that's why the children now can go to school and have their free breakfast. That was something that the Panthers started, and they're not given credit for that.
They're not given credit. No.
Right. So every free breakfast program should have a little historical piece given to those children, or they should think about that so that the children can know. I mean, hell, y'all always talking about some damn George Washington chopped down a cherry tree. Remember when he used to hear that crazy shit in school all the time?
That's right.
You know,
and it just didn't make sense to me.
You know, there was a part of that history that we should know about. Also, Brown, you can maybe concur if I'm correct. There was the coming of a guy named Ron Karinga, who formulated the division where it was the West Coast Panthers versus the East Coast Panthers. And I know it was a part of the COINTELPRO poison, but there was also the coming of Eldridge Cleaver. And when the Cleaver came along, there was further dismantling of this friction between the East Coast Panthers and even right there on the West Coast, where black women were sexually and physically abused by these brothers, and that there was never the concern, why would you want to unite with white folks who never wanted to make it clear that they were standing with us no matter what? And the subset of the Panthers were easily divided because it's COINTELPRO. Black Panthers were busy talking too much, telling their business, and the FBI under J. Edgar Hoover, everybody knows about J. Edgar Hoover,
The FBI took the Panthers serious about being a threat to American society. And because the Panthers didn't have the kind of wherewithal to defend themselves against what this government could do to you, including neutralize you, like Fred Hampton and Mark Clark, poisoned while they were drinking Kool-Aid. And the sad thing about it, I don't know who got mutilated or badly done by the police between the Panthers and the MOVE people who were burnt alive in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, let's we forget about the MOVE people. But the Panthers, God bless them, they meant well, but Stokely Carmichael even said they didn't have the discipline to understand what it was to be very much disciplined to ward off internal conflicts and to know that the FBI had set the poison. And then
one of the things about the COINTELPRO was that when the organization was infiltrated back after the initiatives of J. Edgar Hoover, there was a proposition that went out under the Jimmy Carter administration by Zbigniew Brzezinski. And after the deaths of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, this was the National Security Council said that no black man in this country would ever rise again to the extent of being a messiah for his people.
Check that out.
And once I get this information, I think it was Proposition 46, Proposition 59, but I got a copy of it somewhere in my record. And if I get it, sure, I'll mail everybody one. But this was under Jimmy Carter, a so-called Democratic president.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the problem with what happened was, after they were organized, a lot of the things the intricate details of what happened within the party, these things happened because of provocateurs. These were guys that were set up, ex-Vietnam veterans, ex-Free Corner Hustlers, whatever you have, and these guys would be paid by the FBI to join the party and always come up with ideologies of doing things that was against the law. And when these guys carried out these actions, that's how a lot of these shootouts happened.
Thank you.
Because they were infiltrated. So, now when as big an organization as it was, because other than the UNIA, the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense was the only black organization that has been organized in the United States to have an international office. Their international office was in Algiers. That's when Eldridge Cleaver had to leave the country, and he established an office in Algiers. And, you know, it goes on to say, and I'm going to say this, nothing has changed. As I told Ashir today when we had a conversation, the sad thing is that it is hard to change the mindset of our people. You know, I heard my brother talking about these ministers, and I heard you talking about what the church is not doing. And you know, I got pictures in my wall of all the Panthers. I'm looking at Rap Brown right now. I got a picture of Rap Brown. Now, my point is this. When I joined, I was 16 years old. I understood racism. I had been involved with police brutality by being locked up at 15 or 14 for robbing the cleaners. You know, a gun was put to my head. I was taken to a grocery store right by a bridge where I lived at. And it was 22 degrees outside, and I was forced out of the police paddy wagon and told to walk home. And at 14 years old, that scared the shit out of me. Because I didn't know, when they took me behind the store, I had no idea what they were going to do to me. And, you know, at that point in time, I continued to read, and I continued, and once they had established a chapter in Norfolk, Virginia, I went to one of the meetings, and I continued to go to the meetings. I continued to read the papers. But at 16, I understood socialism, I understood communism. I had a red Mao Zedong. I'm talking about 16. I'm not talking about 26. And I understood what their initiative was. And I knew that in order for us to be progressive in a movement, that one thing we had to do, and that was unity. When they banded, and this is why I tell people to be very, very careful about this Black Lives Matter foolishness. When we banded with the Students for a Democratic Society, you had Bernadine Dorn, you had Abby Hoffman, you had all of these people that were radical. Now, they killed Abby Hoffman. But Bernadine Dorn was the most wanted person on the FBI list for about 10 years because she was blowing up federal buildings. They offered her a compromise. And right now, she's at Northwestern University in Chicago. She's a law professor.
She's what?
She's a law professor.
Wow.
You know, she never did any time. They were always able to walk away from the atrocities of being labeled as a radical. What happened?
That's right.
They just released Eddie Conway in 2014 out of Baltimore, who spent 44 years in jail.
Imagine that.
For a murder he did not commit. They just released Saduko, the guy that was supposed to be instrumental in freeing Asada Shakur.
His name, let me see. I have his name written down, Brother Brown. I have it for you. I think it's Odu. Yes, it's Odu something.
Cool.
Saduko. Yeah.
And he was on Democracy Now! This morning, and I saw him. And, you know, and what he said was that when Emmett Goodman asked him about Asada Shakur, he wouldn't give her an answer on
right.
the radio. He wouldn't give it to her, you know, because he's not going to be implemented in that. And he had enough sense to tell her. He said, well, all I'm going to say is that it's a blessing that she's free. He left it like that.
Well, but, you know, Brown, Reverend Sharpton was wired while a revolutionary close contact with Asada was trying to get this guy to get Reverend Sharpton information so Sharpton could tell the FBI where she was hiding out at.
Well, not so, just Sharpton. When Clinton was in office, let's talk about all of this shit. When Clinton was in office, it was this guy from Chicago, Bobby Rush, who was one of the Chicago founders, who was now a congressman, and two more black congressmen. When it came, they didn't use her name, Asada Shakur. They used her slave name, Joanne Tesmont, and they signed a bill to go after her. And Bobby Rush clearly knew who she was. You
see
know?
That?
Yeah. He signed. He passed a bill for them to go for Clinton to go down to Cuba and get her. You know, so we have to look at the significance of people who are opportunists in our community. Same thing about the guy that used to be the head of the NAACP from Baltimore.
Are you talking about? I know you mean. Had his African name.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And, actually, Infumi, that's his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. He pulled the same stunt. Okay, these people are opportunists. And they use that element of, you know, collectivity in the political arena to finance their own goals.
Now, was Ron Karinga also accused of being, was that correct, that he was also a bewilderer, one who was bewildering and caused a split between the East Coast Panthers and the West Coast Panthers?
No. Ron Karinga was an informant. And Ron Karinga was head of an organization called
Us.
United Slaves.
Kalani is the founder of Kwanzaa, if people are not familiar with that name.
I didn't know what that stood for, but now I know it. United Slaves.
Yeah, that's what he's supposed to be accredited with.
Yeah.
But Kwanzaa was really founded by some people in Africa, and he went over there and got the concept and brought it back to America. But the Melana Karinga was here with the United Slaves and was funneled money by the FBI and COINTELPRO. And what he wanted to do, he really didn't cause the split. He would go out and have guys to shoot up officers at night, and people thought the police was doing it.
Wow.
So therefore, that brought a whole lot of heat.
Of course.
Upon the various chapters, and that's how a lot of brothers got killed and got wiped out. You know, and, you know, I mean, it happens every day. And, you know, that's why we need to be very careful. Now, back to the white people that were that were radicals during this period of time, following Nixon's removal of troops from Vietnam, they were able to go back into mainstream white America.
Yeah. Yeah. Tom Hayden just died.
Yeah.
You heard that?
But I know that all of them, I mean, but they were able to go back into mainstream white America, cut their hair, put on a blue suit, and dissolve themselves into white society. We, in turn, were either locked up, had drug habits, or were killed. So you cannot sacrifice your movement to incorporate your ideologies and self-help initiatives by thinking that we are one multicultural society with the same goals.
It's a deception.
It's deception. You know, and that's why I tell these younger people that I run in contact with, and I got a couple of lectures coming up on this campus, and I'm going to tell them about Black Lives Matter. Now, they don't have to like what I'm saying. I don't care.
Well, listen. Can we do this, guys? Can we stay focused on, like, the origin and the history of the Black Panthers? Because that's what our topic is tonight. If we could just kind of, like, go more into, like, why the Panthers formed, what were they fighting, what were they going up against, what was the climate like?
Right. They
were going up against the same thing that we're fighting today, police. I call it police brutality. I call it police terrorism. And that they were tired of the police terrorism, so they organized young people to take a stand. And in California, it was allowed to have open carry. So they had their rifles, and the FBI was very, Jacob Hoover, who was a chronic Afrophobic, who hated black people, especially strong black male leadership, starting from the days of J. Edgar Hoover, starting the days of Marcus Garvey, he had it in for the Black Panthers. The Panthers were good for giving our young people the hope to stand up and fight against the police terrorism. They were very good with the community spirit, with the concern about the least fortunate, because it was not the concern of, like, when they attacked the middle-income blacks, who were stooges for this system, and still are, many of them. It don't take much to have these, what's called the bougie, the bourgeoisie, the book came out, the black bourgeoisie. They are those blacks who are under the illusion that some of them believe they came over here on the Mayflower. They don't identify with the least fortunate, like Clarence Thomas. So you have these young men and women who were Black Panthers, who were very serious, made them very dedicated, but they also had infiltrators that had another diabolical program already instructed by the FBI to do all that they could to disrupt. The same thing happened to Malcolm with his organization. The very idea that they were, like you said, Brown, never would they allow another black leader, strong black leader, to rise up like Dr. King and Malcolm X.
Well,
one
of the things about the origin was during that period of time, Sister Ashira, I'm gonna stick to the topic. During that period of time, we were faced with a whole lot of police brutality. If you look at some of the clips, like from some of the things that they show on TV, you will see that, you know, we were always lined up against the wall, especially after 1968, because when the Panthers were in Oakland, when they organized themselves in Oakland, it was at a time when police brutality, the majority of the police departments all across the country were predominantly white.
Yep.
And they had a lot of Southern cops who...
Yes, sir.
...who were...
Trans.
...gathered out abroad in different major metropolitan cities to do just that, bring havoc upon the black community. Mm-hmm. So what the Panthers, when they organized, these were guys that were college students. They weren't just guys off the street that said, we're going to go get some guns and kill the pig. These were, Huey Newton was a college student. Bobby Seale had been in the war, he was a college student. And, you know, they decided that what they would do, they would organize block security for the people in Oakland. It was like a watch. You know how you have neighborhood watches?
That's right.
Right.
Throw the block. That's how they organized themselves.
So Newton and Bobby Seale met at Merritt Junior College in West Oakland.
Right. That's where they met. They were both college students. See, most people don't associate them with going to college.
And Huey P. Newton was brilliant. He was able to recite the law to police officers right there
fluently
on the street when they were assaulting black people.
Yeah. He would speak fluently about the law and he spoke with a staccato and such rapidity he baffled most white leaders that were selling out. And Huey knew the law. And that's what made him so dangerous, because he knew the law and that he was not going to be selling out where he would become a corporate Negro.
Yes.
He was for the people. And that because he wouldn't sell out, they eventually neutralized him.
Yeah. They killed him after he did a stint in the penitentiary and he got out.
Uh-huh.
It was alleged that he had robbed a drug deal or something like that. And the guy killed him. But that was it.
Certainly.
Because they knew if he came back, he could organize the same people along the same lines. Because the man was brilliant, and I give him credit.
Yes.
In Norfolk, we had a guy that was equivalent to Huey Newton, and his name was Andrew Bowler. Andrew Bowler was immaculate at not only quoting the law, but writing the law.
Wow.
You know, and writing briefs. And, you know, he died in the 70s, the early 80s. He died over there in India, Pakistan, in India, I think, in New Delhi. He died in New Delhi. But, you know, once they organized themselves, you know, you always see this picture of them on the steps of the courthouse courthouse in California.
Right. That's right.
Protecting Betty Shabazz. Well, that's when Ronald Reagan changed the gun laws in California. You know, and that's when the FBI launched COINTELPRO.
Yep.
And once they launched COINTELPRO, which was a counterintelligence program of the FBI, it was to neutralize the Panthers at all costs. And
Brown, who was killed first, Fred Hampton and Mark Clark or Huey Newton? Because Fred Hampton was warned by Dick Gregory, "Boy, they're gonna kill you." And Fred Hampton told Dick Gregory, "Man, I don't care. I'm ready to die."
Well,
wasn't that long, huh?
Well,
Fred Hampton was told by Dick Gregory, "Man, they're gonna kill you." And Fred Hampton allegedly told Dick Gregory, "Man, I don't care. I'm ready to die.
Fred
I'm not
Hampton
gonna
died
up.
First. Fred Hampton died first
did?
Because I think he died in what was it? He's a 69 or 71.
Yeah. And Huey Newton was killed in the early 70s.
He was killed
in the 1980s, allegedly by drug dealers.
Right.
Oh, boy. Okay.
August 27, 1989.
Wow.
He got out of penitentiary. was alleged that he robbed a drug dealer in California, and the guy traced him down and killed him, whatever.
Yeah.
But when Fred Hampton and Mark Clark got killed, they were organizers in the Chicago Panther, I think.
Mm.
And they were doing a lot of, you know, community activism work.
Yep, yep.
And the Chicago police had paid this guy, who was one of Fred Hampton's buddies, and who was also a member of the Black Panther Party, to go in there and put Sycamore in his Kool-Aid.
Yep,
so that was stabilized him mentally. So when they went in there and kicked the house in, and his wife was pregnant at the time with Fred Hampton
Jr.
That's right. And when they went in there and they shot him up and shot the whole apartment up, you know, he couldn't defend himself because he was inoxified by the drug. And
they said when the cops went into the room, they said he's still breathing. So he pulled his wife out and shot him some more. They said he's not breathing anymore now.
That's right.
And never was an indictment. There was no indictments.
Mm-mm.
So even Chicago always have been dirty.
Yeah.
Always have been. Since the days of the gangsters.
Right.
Uh-huh.
One of the most corrupt cities next to New York. And the L.A. police force was very terrible, too. And then you had, you know, you had the New York 21, who was awful.
You know, that's right.
Angola 3. Let's not forget about the Angola 3.
Yeah. Brother Foxwood, and I think one of them died. There was three of them. They were locked up in solitary confinement for 30-some years.
Uh-huh.
Albert Foxwood and Robert somebody. I can't remember their name.
Albert Woodfox, and Herman Wallace.
Yeah, I think Herman Wallace was... He died.
Yeah.
He was released. Yeah, but he died right after his release.
Yes, sir.
Because Foxwood and King were on TV this morning, along with Conway and Saduka.
Okay, let me just read this piece so we can all have this clearly presented to everybody. Let's see, the Angola 3, they were three former prison inmates, and they were one of the ones who formed like the first Black Panther chapter in prison. So they were in solitary confinement and Louisiana State Penitentiary, also known as Angola Prison. Can't you, Timber, you always talk about Angola. In April 1972, I was only 1 year of age, after the killing of a corrections officer, Robert King spent 29 years in solitary confinement before his conviction was overturned and he was released. Wallace was released on October 1st, 2013, after more than 41 years in prison. And see, that's what pisses me off. You damn near stay in jail all your life, and then when you're dying, then they release you. That's just ridiculous, and it's inhumane. Woodfox's unconditional release was decided on June 10, 2015, after 43 years of solitary confinement. On November 20, 2014, Woodfox had his conviction overturned by the U.S. Court of Appeals. And in April 2015, his lawyer applied for an unconditional writ for his release. Albert Woodfox was released on February 19, 2016, after the prosecution agreed to drop the push for a retrial and accept his plea of no contest, lesser charges of burglary and manslaughter. These prisoners have been the subject of two documentary films. You can check them out. And Amnesty International actually got involved in their case. So just wanted to share that. And just real quickly, the climate which brought about the rise of the Black Panthers, who followed Malcolm X's philosophy, at that time, in 1966, 32% of Black people were living below the poverty line. In 1966, 71% of the poor living in metropolitan areas were black. By 1968, two-thirds of the black population lived in ghettos. The Panthers realized that the movement needed to progress beyond the battles for desegregation and to address the fundamental economic problems that people faced in their daily lives. So they were one of the first independent organizations to have a clear analysis of the type of society we live in, one in which a small class holds all the economic and political power and use it to exploit the majority.
See, and that's how they initiated and came up with the 10-point program, you know, and that was one of the major points. And the party was a 10-point program in which they asked for certain things, not concessions. They just asked for elements of freedom, elements of separation and elements of freedom, as well as elements of inclusion. And that's what set the nation on fire, because of the fact that 68, after Dr. King died, the party's membership tripled. They tripled it.
We really need to take a quick break because we did miss our last break. So let's just take a quick break and we can come right back and we can talk more about the Black Panther Party 10-point program and hear more on the struggles that the Black Panthers faced during their tumultuous existence. We'll be right back.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
We stand here today with Mr. and Mrs. Payton because of an unfortunate incident that happened in the Stone County School District. Just recently, their son was assaulted in school. He was assaulted in the way in which individuals took the liberty to lasso a rope around his neck and pull the noose tight. It is an unfortunate incident because these same individuals earlier this year came to school brandishing Confederate flags in their vehicles. As of today, Mr. and Mrs. Payton has not been notified of any actions taken against the young men. As NAACP and Mr. Robert James, the local branch president, we're calling on federal investigators to view this as a racial hate crime. No child should be in fear of going to school. No child should be walking down the hall or in a locker room and be accosted with a noose around their neck. This is 2016, not 1916. This is America. This is a place where children should go to school and feel safe in their environment. We call on the Stone County School Districts to take immediate action to rectify this situation in accordance with their policy. Their policy is very clear, that if a child is assaulted in school, that those who are involved should be expelled immediately.
Yes.
That has not happened.
Just as they did in my child.
We are called attention to this incident to ensure it is not swept under the rug, and this child who was accosted is provided the proper safety in this school environment. The unfortunate part of this scenario, Mrs. Payton did attempt to file charges with the sheriff's department, and she was discouraged from doing so because one of the young men's father is a former law enforcement officer.
Three teens in Chicago have been arrested after they attempted to put a noose around the neck of a 17-year-old African-American student by the name of Joshua Merritt. So it turns out that Joshua Merritt was accused of dating one of the white student's cousins, And the white students didn't like that. So they invited him over to hang out. And in the process of doing so, Joshua Merritt says that they allegedly put the noose around his neck on two different occasions. And then he finally escaped and left. And he says, look, if I didn't find a way to leave, there's a huge chance that I wouldn't be here today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to play both of those clips because, as we can see, this continues to happen. And if people remember, just recently, the young girl was I think in the Dallas area, right outside of the Dallas, Texas area. The young girl that was attending this exclusive white school, I think she was like the only little black girl there at a summer camp, and the boys put a noose around her neck. Right. So I just don't even understand how is this constantly happening and how are we going to move forward in terms of protecting our children.
Let me give you my understanding why this is happening, my dear sister. Mm-hmm. Ever since we were brought to this country, they debased us and never were we considered to be human beings. We're the only race in the Constitution that is defamed in the Constitution. What do they say we are, Brown? 3/5. Chief Justice Raymond Taney, whose brother-in-law is Raymond Scott Key, said before he handed down his official decision to Dred Scott that he was going to be turned down for compensation for free labor. He said, being that blacks are not citizens of this country, a black man has no rights that a white man need respect.
That's all fine and well, but what I want to know is, what are we going to do to stop these people from putting nooses around our children?
Our people are not facing the fact that we are in a state of emergency. This is the worst of times for blacks to be in this country because white people are realizing that the year 2034 is right around the corner. That's the official year when white people will be declared officially the minority in this country. They are livid that black people have survived slavery, AIDS, the miseducational system, the prison system. We are still surviving, and we are their number one arch nemesis. They never saw black people as human beings, and because we never had political, we never had political or legal protection. NAACP, they meant well, but we still never had political or legal protection. The Irish, Italian, and Israeli, they didn't stop until they got it. But without those two components...
So let me ask you this, Canty. Back to my original question, what are we going to do? Because we know what the status is. We know what all the problems are. So my question is to you and everybody else. Delta, are you still on the line?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. So my question is, what are we going to do? Okay, so we know we're in the worst state. Wait a minute, Ken. Hold on, Ken. Let Delta talk a little bit now. I appreciate all your commentary, but we hadn't let Delta hardly say anything.
Of course.
Yeah. Let Delta talk.
And they just had another update just now on the news. And I must say, the niggas and the preachers was down there tonight. Lord, forgive me. It wasn't. They was down there tonight.
Oh, why don't you stop saying, Lord, forgive you? You sound like a Catholic. You want to commit a sin and then go ask for some. She want to ask for some forgiveness. Get out of here with that. Just say it. Nigga preachers, it ain't doing nothing. All right, now.
Well, they was down there tonight, and they was praying. And and the young, they talked to a young white boy tonight. He said he was there when the incident happened, and he said he don't know why they did it. He said,
right.
He said, well, that's what he said.
He was
just like, it was like the football team. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the ones there that was on the football team. He said he saw the incident. He said he really believed the boys did it as a prank. He said, but you can't, he said, you shouldn't prank that away, you know. But see, this is what it is. And if it had been a black child, it's not a prank. He was trying to commit murder. So you get what I'm saying?
They always even if trying
You know what? But here's my thing though. If you listen to that recording, that's why I wanted to play that recording of the NAACP giving the press conference. There was a mother standing right there on the side, and when he mentioned like the zero tolerance policy and the expulsion,
mm-hmm.
the mother said, "Like they did my child," meaning so her child was expelled for something. So even if this was a prank, let's go with that. This was a prank. There's still zero tolerance. You don't do that, so now you should be expelled.
Right.
Yeah, but we all know why they wasn't expelled. See, because the daddy is, it's the good old boy system. Don't you see? His daddy
Oh, we got that. We know that. So back to the same question I proposed to Kenzie. So what do we do?
Well, let me
we don't have to rise up
really...
and fight back.
There you go. But see, we are not going to get anywhere with these jive ecclesiastical pimps. Use that, use ecclesiastical pimps. Rather than saying niggas, call them ecclesiastical pimps. And that these ecclesiastical pimps are in vitally the location, as far as a strategic location, with these mega churches and giving our people entertainment. So their chore is to do the government a favor to numb our brains further, where we do not have pastors. When was the last time you heard a pastor labeled a militant? The last pastor in this area that was labeled a militant was a Presbyterian preacher named Milton A. Galamison. His church is on the death ward right now. They might be given its final benediction between now and the 40-year is out.
The church is.
But we don't have activist pastors.
Mm-hmm.
We have these professional blacks who are concerned about me, myself, and I, and the hell with the masses that they consider asses.
So what about people like Delta that really want to do something? What can she do?
But Delta have to stop being apologetic to these racist crackers, these sellout blacks, and asking for Lord relief for peace. Please forgive you. They are what you're seeing as being accurate. These are sellouts. These are self-hating Negroes. These are people who I call in the pulpit ecclesiastical pimps. Their chore is to bewilder us, keep us divided, keep us so conditioned, psychologically conditioned. And see, right now, we really need a convention, an emergency convention, black convention, somewhere in Houston, somewhere in Mississippi, where we need to really come together as a people to put in black and white, what are we going to do to ensure the unborn generation survival? Because right now, most blacks don't understand why so many white people in the millions supporting Trump, and why they are so angry. They see their world falling all around them, but black people will be the last to be informed that we are targeted. Our citizens are shut up.
Go ahead. I'll say this. Comment.
White people speak bilingual. Legalese and military science. Legalese is natural law. Most whites believe in natural law. Military science is targeted. Are black men the most targeted? So all I can say is that we have not grasped what is the biggest problem amongst white people towards blacks, seeing blacks as the number one arch nemesis.
All right, King B. So let me ask Delta, since you're there, you're quite familiar with the story, what would you like to see happen?
I would like to see them be thrown in jail and don't get out. But and I must say this to your question too. I want to reply to this. You were saying, you know, what black people would do. A lot of black people want to go in and do and take the law in their own hands. But see, they're afraid where the white man, if you do it to his child, he come into your house and get you that night. Because he know the law gonna be on his side.
That's he believes in natural law.
And see, and then, but the black folks, they don't have nobody to, the law on their side. They don't have nobody to stand with them, because the majority of them, they gonna think about their family. If I stand up by myself, I want to do this. I want to go in and take the law in my own hands. But if I take the law in my own hands, who's going to take care of my family? What about my family?
That's exactly
what a lot of people are afraid of.
When you don't have political or legal protection, look, you got the Congressional Black Caucus. What is their function after all these years? What is their function? You think they don't know about what happened in Mississippi? And Delta, I'm looking for you to tell us what's going on in the Delta area, because I heard there's slavery going on the plantation where blacks are afraid to leave the plantation for fear of reprisals. They got slavery down there in the Delta area of Mississippi.
Can I say something?
Yes, Brother Brown.
You know, I heard these things talking about we're scared. Man, I have a very broad question. What are you scared of?
Thank you. God damn. They're already killing you, so what you afraid of what?
What do you have to fear?
Damn.
Black people are afraid of the white man.
I told y'all a year ago. Hold on, I listen to everybody. Let me say something.
Please.
You cannot rely on the same system of mentally enslaved people if you want to be free. When Nat Turner got free, go look at the movie. When Nat Turner wanted to be free, he didn't go from plantation to plantation to gather up a whole bunch of people. He decided, he said, well, damn it, I'm going to be free if don't nobody else be free.
That's right.
That's right. That's
I have to lose my life to be free, then right. Let me live my life. Okay. And Nat Turner didn't have to get caught. I've been in Nat Turner country. I've been to Courtland, Virginia. They used to be called New Jerusalem. There's a road right now that's known among black people in Courtland, Virginia, called Blackhead Road. You know why they call it Blackhead Road? Because when they cut Nat Turner's head off, after they hung him, they put it on a post as a sign of fear for any Negro living in that county if they thought about that again. So when you're dealing with a mentally enslaved people, who are operating out of fear, then you ask yourself, if you're sitting there waiting for a savior so that you can be not radical and you can be militant, then you ain't gonna never be free your damn self.
Thank you. Indeed. And if I could just say this really quickly, Brother Brown, then you can pick back up if you don't mind. One thing I love that Dick Gregory said, we're looking for justice from an unjust system. So we sitting up here waiting on an unjust system to give us justice. We begging, oh, will you please lock up them criminals that came in here and hurt my baby or killed my husband or killed my son? Will you please, master, kill them? That shit ain't going to happen. So black people need to quit waiting on that stuff. Now, if you're not listening to the abolitionist radio show that comes on right before the Lotus Place, please start listening to the Abolitionist Radio Show, because I heard Scotty say something. He was in a conversation with the sister about like vigilante justice. Okay, Scotty was talking about how if someone came in, because she was a sexual abuse survivor, and so she was talking about how she had a shotgun in her house when I guess the abuser attacked her, but she decided not to shoot and kill this person. And Scotty said that if somebody came in and was raping his son or his daughter, then he would shoot and kill them. And I'm like, hell yeah, that's right. I'm not going to pick up the phone, ooh, 911, somebody just raped my daughter. Hell no. I'm going to handle that right then and right there. And that's the problem with black folks. Y'all are too goddamn scary. You're always calling 911 and waiting on somebody to go to court for you and lawyer this and all of this old stuff, when you can simply handle all of that your goddamn self if you just get up and just handle it. Don't nobody have to know what you've done. Don't you know how to be a thief in the night? Use a little stealth.
Nope.
Don't you know how to just sit back and wait and then attack? Have you forgotten your
yes.
African skills?
Yes.
I mean, what is the problem? Y'all snap your way. I mean, like Dick Gregory say, you waiting on justice from an injustice? You want the same court system that don't give you any rights. You want them to give you some justice. That's insane.
That's right. I mean, what are you waiting on?
What you waiting on?
You gotta tell me what the hell you waiting on.
Please tell me. I just need to know so maybe I can get off of it.
Waiting on Jesus to fix it.
Waiting on
Jesus.
Well,
I mean, we're not here to make mockery. I'm very serious because, as I said months ago, if you're waiting on an elected official, if you're waiting on a pastor, and I hear you, brother, my brother, you talked about where the preacher's at. Okay, so what are you going to do if you don't have one that's adamant about being radical? What is your goal? What is your personal goal if you can't find a preacher that's going to sit up and say, you know what, the hell with these white people. I don't need a leader. You be a leader yourself.
We're all the leaders. You're right. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Can't lead yourself, and I know you can't lead anybody else. But you be a leader. Don't sit down and wait on somebody else to come and lead you, because guess what? It ain't going to happen.
It ain't
gonna
happen.
No, it ain't gonna happen.
Black people are looking for a Messiah, and now they're gonna vote in heavy numbers.
Well,
they're gonna vote in heavy numbers for Hillary Clinton as being the one that's gonna.
Okay. Let's stop bullshitting. Okay, excuse my language. Forget Hillary Clinton. Okay, because if Obama is supposed to be a black president and he didn't do a damn thing for you, then what the white woman gonna do?
Thank you.
Child, please.
I mean, Detroit, Michigan.
What has any president ever done for the black person? Not a damn thing.
Nothing. I mean, Abraham Lincoln tells us.
Nobody has ever done nothing for us. I don't know where we get it from. That's not my cup of tea. I don't care what people think about me. But none of these people who have ever held political office on a national scale, even a local or state scale, has ever done anything for me. And I don't expect them to. I don't look for them to. I don't expect them to, because I have to understand that I have one goal and purpose in life, and that is to continue to be free at any cost.
We had a brave brother in Congress. He was a brave brother in Congress who was the first and last congressman Harlem ever had who could pass for a white man. I'm talking about Adam Clayton Powell Jr.
You're talking about 40 years ago. Okay,
well,
you're talking about Adam Clayton Powell. Adam Clayton Powell is dead and gone. Charlie Rangel no longer exists. So, I mean, now what are we going to do?
Like I said, we never had the representation to be bodacious.
Okay, so who needs? I don't need no representation. I don't need anybody to represent me to be free.
We are our own leaders. We all are our leaders. We're waiting for the right one.
I ain't waiting for nobody. Y'all go ahead and wait for somebody, and I hope y'all find them. But I ain't waiting on nobody to set me free.
No, we have to seize.
I ain't got time for that. Do my language.
You got to seize the opportunity, but we don't have our people.
Where's your opportunity at?
Yeah, it's not there.
We've been talking about that equal opportunity shit ever since we got off the slave ship. Did they give us equal opportunity? Hell no. I saw Naeem Akbar a couple of years back. You know what he said? Something that made a whole lot of sense.
What did he say?
He said, y'all sitting around here, he said, they probably want, and he was at CBN University.
Uh-huh.
He said, they probably won't never have me back here no more after what I say, what I got to say. He said, but if y'all sitting around here waiting on somebody to free you, he said, y'all a damn fool.
Who said that?
That's exactly what he said. He said, because nobody will ever give you
Naeem
the right.
Naeem Akbar, the black
sucker. Yeah, Naeem Akbar.
Yes, yes, yes.
And he said, if somebody takes something from you, regardless of who it is, he said, my suggestion to you is take it back.
Well, so let me ask you this. Okay, go ahead, and I want to ask both of you a question.
They have taken our freedom from us for how many years? Over 500 years they've been taking our freedom, and we've been sitting here begging for that shit to come back. So what have they gave
us?
Yeah, right. There ain't no justice. Like Richard Pryor said, when you go down there looking for justice, that's all you find is just us.
Just us, exactly.
Just
so let me ask both of you this before we get ready to close out. Now, this is something that Delta and I were talking about earlier. So down there in Mississippi where this incident occurred, they're very much into football, as most of the country is. They're very much into football. And so what I was saying to Delta, you know, I'm always preaching, you know, pull our children out of the public school system anyway because they're just making money off of our children and not educating them. And I understand that people may not know the steps in starting to homeschool, or you may not have the money to send your child to a private school or something like that, or a freedom school or whatever the case may be. But I think that we just really need to start taking some time, maybe over the summer. Parents, take some time and figure this out. How can we work this out? There are a lot of retired teachers that I'm sure would love to help open up a school, a small freedom school. It don't have to be a large school like Dr. Umar was trying to do, construct. But my question is, since, okay, like Delta mentioned that a lot of the schools there have the young black boys playing football, young black men playing football, bringing all of this publicity and money to the schools. What if we pull our children out and have those children in our own schools, and then maybe we can reduce some of this terror that they're faced with in the public school system, since so many of our children are having these nooses thrown around their necks. So what do you guys think about that? And is it possible?
I'm in favor of it, and like I said, it's one thing we have to understand about integration. Okay, and this is where the whole thing boils down to. You know, and it's the same thing I said about religion. Who told you that you were integrated? Who told you that you were a Christian? You know, I mean, we keep going round for round. We can start a school with 10 people in there. That's all
like
we need.
Marva Collins did it. That's why I don't understand what's the problem.
The problem is that we do not understand the nature of white supremacy domination. We need to understand, identify the enemy, and then treat it as such. We still are beat around the bush, but the enemy is white supremacy and Zionism.
Okay, so if people don't understand by now, with somebody putting a noose around your child's neck, if they don't understand that, then I guess you do need to have your stupid ass in the public school, because you're not going to learn no goddamn way. So I guess you do need to stay there. So,
yeah.
But I just really would like for us to start thinking on how we can transition into home schooling.
I've seen the information, Sharon, later on today. I've seen that information about getting in contact with how to get monies to Ramsey Orton.
Please do.
Yeah, I'm going to send you. Browns, take care. Everybody, take care. Take care.
All right.
See you later, Lorna. Peace and love.
Love you. All right. Okay, King B. So, well, we will get ready to close out, and I want to thank you, Brother Brown, for sharing the information with us on Black Panther Party and your involvement. Thank you so much. I think we should kind of frequently have a show just highlighting some of the activities of the Black Panthers, because so much of their contributions are just lost in the midst of history. And thank you so much, Delta. And Delta, please give us an update. give us an update soon. Yes, yes, keep us abreast of any kind of.
And I'd like to make one quick comment. My papa said how we really could get there is if all the black parents, and that's something I'm going to start tweeting and putting on Facebook, if we need to all pull our kids out of our football.
Well, let me say something.
That's a Friday night.
Let me say something to you, Sister Donna, because I want you to hear this real clear. Don't put all your thoughts on Facebook.
Okay.
Because you're not the only. First of all, we need to understand what Facebook is. Facebook is not an opportunity for us to be equal.
Well, I'll tell you where you can be equal if you go on to Black Talk Radio Network's new social media page, BTR, which Scotty started. Then you can have that black social experience. And we should support that. I mean, we support Facebook, we support Twitter. Why not support this black social media experience that was started by Scotty? We're on Scotty's network. We should support him and the social media platform that he's established for us. So this is something for us, by us. So Brother Brown, I need to see you on there. Delta, I need to see you on there. I mentioned this constantly. None of y'all have signed up, and you need to sign up on the real.
Well, I'm there I'm kind of sick of Facebook, because Facebook is really an entity that's shared by the FBI. And everything that 90% of what we put on there.
You are correct.
90% of what we put on there, they already know what you're going to say. So until we understand that, you know. Because, I mean, I don't even frequent Facebook like I used to, because I don't really have time for foolish. And a lot of the stuff that's being put on Facebook is nothing but foolish.
So, Delta, why don't you do this, Delta? Get those parents together down there in Mississippi, and you guys organize, and you do what you need to do. If it takes pulling the children out, do like a Colin Kaepernick and the rest of these people. Say, hey, listen, we're not playing not one more game. Not one more game until those boys are charged. I bet you they do something
new. Well, Colin Kaepernick can't stop playing football. He got
bent. Well, no, I'm just saying, do some type of action.
Right,
let's do some type of action. We need
some positive action, and we need to understand that these things are real.
That's right. And say, no, it's not going to be business as usual. No, we're not just going to keep going to the stores. No, we're not going to just keep going to church. No, we're not just going to keep coming to school. No, we're not just going to keep coming to play no football game. You better charge those boys, and you charge them right now. That's what y'all do. And until y'all stand up and show them, until we stand up and show them that it's not business as usual, then guess what? They're going to keep it business as usual, and they're going to keep lynching our children. So until you guys are ready to stand up, until we all are ready to stand up and do something, then we need to just stop complaining. Because what we complaining for? What you tweeting for? What you hashtagging for? You ain't gonna do shit. So, I mean, you know, let's be real.
Send me the link to Scott's thing, and I'll go ahead and I'll jump on it tomorrow.
All right, but look, you tell Papa down there, Delta, that's what needs to happen. Exactly what Papa said, and I agree with him on that.
Yeah.
No more football. No football. No football, no shocking, no nothing.
But, you know, the sad thing about that is that some of these parents will do with my son. My son ain't going to get no scholarship, and he ain't going to do this, and he ain't going to do that. And, you know, my thoughts to those people like that is that, who said he's gonna get one anyway?
Right.
Yeah. We can start these schools very small. It's very inexpensive. All we have to do is go to the education bookstore, same one that the teachers use, buy some books, and sit down and teach the children.
Homeschool them. It's just,
you know,
look. I'm going to say this, and we're going to
go ahead. Even if you don't pull them out of public school, teach them at night. Our children spend too much time bullshitting.
Yeah.
They're doing Facebook. They're doing all this other stuff.
And then when the white folks decide that they want to make mockery of them, then we get all upset.
Right.
But that's our fault because we're not teaching our children.
We're not teaching our children. Exactly.
No, we're not. Nothing.
No,
only
no.
All you teach is how to be good slaves.
That's it. And that has to stop. That has to stop, people. It is time for the transformation. So we want to hear about what kind of actions are taking place in Mississippi coming up. Let's get organized, people. All it takes is some organization. Organize, organize, organize is what Kwame Ture said, and that's what we need to do. Peace and good night from the
good
lotus
night.
Place. Namaste. Take care of your business, people. Stop being scary slaves.
That's right.